2,000 years ago, philosophers in ancient Greece established philosophical schools to teach their philosophy to those who were willing to learn. Pythagoras, who most of us know for his mathematical theorem, established a school in Croton. His students likely lived together and pooled common resources. It is said that students could not ask a question until they had listened for 7 years. Later, Plato and Aristotle founded schools in Greece to further the study of philosophy. Enlightenment-era Europe, the study of philosophy grew as access to education in a university setting grew. Today, philosophy is taught mostly in universities, except for the few students who are lucky enough to be exposed in high school through international baccalaureate programs or classical schools. If you are unable to study philosophy formally, where should you start? Should you start at the beginning, with Plato and Aristotle? What about with modern philosophers? Maybe the most famous names? It seems like every philosopher knows everyone who came before them, so it's easy to get lost in jargon and names. This week, on Open Door Philosophy, we will explore that question.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Open Door Philosophy. I am one of your three hosts, Derek Parsons.
I'm the fourth host, Andrew Graziano.
The fourth host? Okay.
Is it because, like, the spirit of Socrates is with us or something? Like an empty chair situation?
Socrates is with us. Yep.
Okay.
And I'm your second host, Taylor Jones.
Oh, well, all right. Thanks, guys. That's a great intro.
There's 4,000 years of wisdom in the first chair. That is the first toast. I don't know.
4,000?
Well, I don't want to get into the whole what is wisdom, but hey, everyone, welcome to Open Door Philosophy, episode number 67, where we're going to talk about how exactly you should get into philosophy, because people have questions. So we're going to do that. Before we do that, however, let's do the old catch-up. Let's see. Taylor, how's it going?
It's going. It's like a third of the way through the semester. So I think I said this last time, but it's crunch time. And we're coming up on first exams this week and next week. And essays due and projects happening. So school is just kind of stressful right now. But yeah, living life. The Astros are not doing very good. Hopefully by the time this episode comes out, they're doing better. But it looks like they're trying to not make playoffs, which is making me sad. So,
they're a bad home team.
They need to get it together.
Baylor football is not doing too hot. We just got crushed by UT.
It is not a good day for Baylor football yesterday, or season, frankly.
No, it's not a good season. Our quarterback is out for who knows how long.
Dark times. Andrew, how are you?
I'm well. I'm doing well. I have a very lucky privilege of being able to listen to a lot of books. So I'm just going through a lot of books right now. The library has a great free audiobook on the phone app that I recently discovered. And so I'm churning through some great books that I've always wanted to read. So that makes me really happy. And so that makes my life exciting. What about you, Mr. Parsons?
What's one you've listened to recently?
Just finished Crime and Punishment, which is a horrifying book. I've been going through all of these Russian books lately. I did The Death of Ilan Ilovich, or whatever it is.
Oh, yeah?
And then finished up Crime and Punishment. Yeah, finished Lord of the Rings, Two Towers a few weeks ago. So I've been going through a lot. But the Russians, I mean, geez. I mean, it's wild. It's just, it's amazing, sickening, but amazing. And I just love it. We have to talk about that one day on this show. I mean, it's incredible.
Russian literature is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you find it reading, or rather listening to those types of books versus reading them?
I mean, I think they're good. This is something that I want to talk about today, but I think that there's a difference, I think, between enjoying a book for its plot, which I think is very easy to do over an audiobook, and then kind of diving into it for study.
Yeah.
For the plot, I think there's almost no difference between, you know, the book and the audiobook.
Hmm.
I think some people get distracted pretty easily for audiobooks, so I think this is just might just be for me. But I love audiobooks. I think they're great.
Awesome.
What about you, Mr. Parsons? How's everything going for you?
Oh, I'm thriving so hard. let's see. Well, I mean, the best news is that my beloved Swans, the Swansea AFC, Swansea City AFC. There we go. Swansea City AFC, my beloved Swans, have finally notched their first victory of the year 8 Yay. Games into the season.
That's great.
We are doing very bad. We have 6 points on 8 games. Soccer people know what that means. And that's not good. We are in the relegation zone right now. It's only the 8 games in. But anyway, we got our first win. And so, good times. It was a 3-0 win. It was a very dominant win. So, pretty happy about that.
That's good.
Of course, we are 22nd in the league. And we were playing the team that was 23rd in the league. So, if we were going to win one, it better be that one. Yeah. And we did, 3-0.
That's great.
So. Other than that, you know, I'm just waiting for this sweater weather to come around. I'm really, really jonesing for it. And what?
I just remembered something. So, speaking of sweaters, but you can finish and then I'll say.
Oh, no, please. I'm engaged.
My Speak Now cardigan was delivered to my house, though.
Oh, wow. I'm so excited for you.
I'm so excited. But because it was supposed to be delivered in November... in like 2 months from now, but it shipped early.
So it came early.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Go ahead.
Oh, I won't be able to get it until October when I'm home. But like, that's only 3 weeks now.
That's right. I'm excited to see what the purple actually looks like, how purple it is.
Oh, we can meet for coffee. We can do a group pumpkin spice latte coffee date.
Oh my gosh, guys, we should totally do a group pumpkin spice fall line, whatever it's called, cream cold brew something or other.
And I'll wear my cardigan and Andrew will be so happy. I can just see the bright smile on his face. He's beaming.
He is smiling. I mean, it's actually really, really, really a nice smile there, Andrew.
He's smiling.
I will also wear my 1989 embroidered hoodie that I purchased. Andrew, what will you wear?
I'll wear my John Mayer hoodie.
I can bring a cardigan for you to wear, Andrew. I have folklore.
Just wear a flannel and you'll be like Evermore.
I'll wear the, who else has she been with? Travis Kelce jersey.
You can wear a red scarf.
Yeah, just wear a red scarf.
The red era.
Oh, we need to get this train back on the tracks. Yeah. Okay. I think that's the update, guys.
That's the update.
In the tradition of having no good segues, actually our segues aren't bad, but I just can't find anything right now. Yeah. Let's get on to the show.
Where should we begin?
Aha! Nice.
So, a week or two ago now, we got a message on the Instagram from a listener named Madalena, and she was asking, where is a good place to start reading philosophy for someone that's not formally studying it? And that's not something I think any of us had ever really thought about, because we've had formal schooling. But we were talking about what was the best way to respond to that and, like, where do you begin?
I think Parsons and I have talked somewhat about, I mean, a long time ago, but we talked a little bit about our exposure to philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, I mean, I know for a fact for Parsons and I know for a fact for me, so I don't know why I'm saying I believe, but I think both of us got into philosophy not in an academic way. I think both of us got into philosophy just through our own interest and discovery. And so I can empathize with this question quite a bit. I can remember going into Half Price Books, looking in the philosophy section that they had, and being totally overwhelmed, and buying books that were complete garbage. And so I can really empathize with this. I don't know. How do you feel, Parsons?
No, that's a great question. I did go back and look to our episodes to see if we had done a specific episode on this, and we had not. I think it was in one of our listener questions episodes, but I do remember talking about it. It was quite some time ago. This is a great topic.
Yep.
Like you, Andrew, I have a lot to say about this because my entry was similar to yours. Taylor, you had the benefit of taking a class, so you were like given what you should read.
From Mr. Parsons.
But from that guy, Mr. Parsons. I mean, the reality is a philosophy going, we've talked about this a lot on the show. Philosophy is something that we as human beings are interested in because philosophy, a lot of it has to do with the big questions of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why are we here? What's my purpose? Dealing with death, these types of things. And of course, people have questions. And where do you go for those types of questions if you have no idea? Well, you go to this thing that people call philosophy. And Andrew, just like you, I mean, I have a whole story about it, about going to the bookstore. I'm just like, I don't know. I don't even know what to do.
Yeah.
So this is a fantastic topic to talk about. I'm really excited we're doing it.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that y'all got into philosophy, I guess, in a non-academic way. I think maybe I knew that from Mr. Parsons, but not Andrew. I just assumed that you took IB philosophy and that was that.
No, I started a little bit beforehand. I don't even know. Sometime in early high school, I don't even know how, to be honest with you. Have we talked about this before, Parsons?
Well, I do remember you telling a story of me talking to you when you were in 10th grade.
I do remember that.
And I noticed you were reading a copy of Plato's Republic. And of course, I pointed that out.
I remember that well.
Struck up a conversation.
Yeah. I remember that. I can remember exactly where that was. But I think before we talk about, I mean, like we said, I think this is a valid question. Before we talk more about this, let's think for a second about this question from first principles. Is philosophy something that's worthy to even, like, is it a worthy pursuit of our time? Because I think this is the fundamental question in all of this. I mean, if we're asking the question, how do we start doing philosophy? That assumes that it's something that's worthy of our time. So I think we should start from a fundamental approach, just like a good philosopher would do. And let's kick the can a little bit around for this question. Is this something important and why?
I definitely have thoughts on this. I think philosophy is definitely a worthwhile thing to do. I'm sure I've said this before, but the reason that I like, yeah, I definitely have. I think even last episode, one of the reasons I like philosophy so much is because it gives you a look into somebody else's brain and you can see the world in a way that you can't from your own eyes. And I think at the very least, from the perspective of learning what other people's worldviews are through their own thoughts, it's worthwhile. But if you go at it from the idea of truth, like pursuing a truth or creating the best XYZ that you can, it's also worthwhile because it gives you space to think through ideas and formulate arguments in a hypothetical realm rather than just straight implementing them. This was something I actually was thinking about, I think last week or 2 weeks ago. In one of the discussion boards for Plato's Republic, for one of my classes, one of my classmates said, why is it worthwhile, basically, for Plato to spend his time and his intellect crafting up this hypothetical ideal city that can never exist? Why shouldn't he just, like, go out into the world and do things that make life better? And my thought was, well, just because he's not doing something doesn't mean his thoughts and his intellect and talent aren't worthwhile. That you can dream up a thought experiment of an ideal city and it can teach you something about the real world and about truth of a real city, whether you do something about it or not. What do y'all think?
Well, this is a fun fact, but Plato tried to, I don't know if you know, but if y'all know this, but Plato tried to start a republic. He tried to start it in Syracuse in Sicily with who's the king? Dionysus.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. I read King Dionysus.
And he talks about it in his seventh letter, in his epistle. And he's trying to convince this king to take over or to implement the republic. Looks like it's going well. Plato goes to visit, tries to convince him, blah, 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 blah. Plato gets captured, gets sold into slavery, and eventually gets bought, his freedom's bought out by some supporter of his or something. Plato, you know, there's a criticism for him definitely being an idealist in some cases, but He tries. Mm-hmm. He tries occasionally.
Occasionally.
It's interesting. Over the summer, I read Robin Waterfield's new biography of Plato, mm-hmm. and of course it talks quite a lot about that. Much more political intrigue involved with that than I had understood before. It's more than just Plato tried to start a republic with this guy and it didn't work out. I mean, Plato was Dionysus, and I can't remember who the other guy was, who was a very wealthy and influential nobleman, who's the one that really had the connection with Plato. And Dionysus was jealous, and he like invited Plato to look cool. Yeah. But then Plato got there, and then Dionysus was mad with his aristocratic buddy who knows Plato, and so he like tried to get back at him and imprisons Plato. I mean, yeah, it was more than we're gonna give this a whirl over here, and it didn't work out. He actually went there twice.
Yeah.
I think it was the second time he was imprisoned and then sold into slavery. Yeah. But what a mess. Yeah. What a mess for sure. And I'm sure so disappointing for Plato. He was so old too.
Yeah.
Late in his life.
Yeah.
Yeah. The second time for sure.
Yeah.
But anyway. Well, that's what we call a bird walk. That's what I call a bird walk.
A bird walk?
Or a rabbit trail.
Oh,
yeah, I guess people don't get bird walk, you know. A bird walk, you know, you're walking through the woods with your head looking up the whole time.
Oh. Huh.
And, you know, you'll trip over a root or something. Mm. This is not a good story to tell. All right. It hasn't turned out that way. Anyway, yay idioms. All right. So, is philosophy worth doing? Well, you know, from an experiential standpoint, I would say, since the both of you majored in it, and I teach it, and we all three have a podcast about it, we must at least think that it's worth doing. But outside of that, trying to come up with some first principles, I don't think you can understand this very weird world that we live in and what it is to be human without putting some thought into it. And that mm-hmm. thought can be increasing degrees of sophistication and understanding. And there might be a point where you're like, this is beyond useful. But nonetheless, I think it ends up in philosophy. And that's because people, humans, by their nature, desire to know.
Mm-hmm.
Not every single human being, I suppose. Or maybe, again, we're talking about degrees. But we desire to know. That in and of itself makes philosophy worthwhile. Because I think that's what that results in, the doing of philosophy. Because mm-hmm. we want to know. Now, is it worthwhile as far as, like, a profession or income or a degree to have and all those types of things? That's a whole nother question. But in the art of being human, you can't do it well anyway, in mm-hmm. my opinion, which could be very inflated and what's it called when you're all, you know,
self-aggrandizing? I don't know what you're
arrogant or whatever, you know, ivory tower or privileged, whatever you want to call it. I could definitely be guilty of that, I suppose, but to live life well, mm-hmm. Is to understand how and why you're living it the way you do. And, well, anyway, mm-hmm. I think I've made my point.
I mean, the great Socrates once said, the unexamined life is not worth living.
That's true, and I buy that. I believe that's true.
I would agree.
And I understand the counter-arguments, and I'm not saying they're bad counter-arguments, but I think for me, that wins out. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Andrew, what do you think?
I'll present some kind of counter-argument just for the sake of it, so it's on the table. If philosophy is an interest for you, then maybe it's a good use of your time, just like any other fun activity for you is, like reading history or mm-hmm. knitting sweaters or watching, you know, a bad football team on TV. take that as the Texans or the Swans or whatever.
They're both bad.
Yeah. I used to think that this unexamined life is worth living, is not worth living things true. I don't buy it anymore. I don't know. Maybe mm-hmm. I'm becoming a little bit unromantic, but mm-hmm. I think if it's something that interests you, then that's good. But is it necessary? Is it a worthy thing to do? I don't know. Maybe if you have some free time, and this is the counter argument that I'm presenting, not necessarily my real view, but maybe I think there's a lot better uses of your time and to spend your time reading pointless books on Nietzsche or, you know, some early 20th century philosopher who thinks that you can prove you know, the world exists because of your two hands in front of you. Is that really a good worth use of your time when you could be performing surgeries or being a charitable person? Probably not. So I don't know.
Can I?
What's a good counter? Oh, go. Please go.
Can I counter your counter argument?
Please, go ahead.
You kind of crafted your idea of like good or worthwhile in alignment with an idea of productive or like serving a community, doing good. But I don't think that everything worthwhile has to be quote unquote productive. I think we've gotten caught up in the idea of everything has to produce something or like do objective good in the world. And like if our time isn't spent serving other people, which it is important, I cannot deny that serving other people is important and doing good things is important. But that doesn't have to be all we do. If we don't do things for ourselves in some way that like fill up our soul and make us content and like are gratifying and allow us to reflect, I think that we lose part of existence and that it's important to do things that are just for our own benefit, like stretching our minds in ways that are just private to us.
I think if it's like I said, if it's something that is fun to you, like watching a bad football team or knitting a sweater mm-hmm. or reading history, then that's good. And that might be a good use of your time. But is it necessarily like something that you have to do to live a good life? I think that my argument doesn't. I don't think either argument that you make or that I make necessitates like philosophy, something that you have to do. So I'm not sure. I think that the counter argument to this needs to be something like philosophy is an essential thing for you to do to live a good life. Like it's impossible to live a good life without it. I'm not convinced, but I do think that the questions that philosophy specializes in asking are things that deeply interest and concern a lot of people. Like, why do we mm-hmm. exist? What is the best way to live life? And so I think from that aspect, like answering questions that are important to us, that's something that's important to do. I don't know. What do you think, Mr. Parsons?
Yeah, so I'm thinking about it here from this angle of definition, and there's lots mm-hmm. of terms I'd really love for us to dig into that we've talked about here, good life and et cetera. The one I do want to think about is philosophy and what it means to do philosophy. Mm-hmm. I think everybody does philosophy. Everybody does philosophy. And I'm always very quick to point out absolutist words like everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But I think everybody does philosophy. Now, does everybody do philosophy well? Are there degrees of philosophy? Maybe someone does it better than others.
For sure.
Would that mean or what would that look like? But I mean, mm-hmm. everyone's interested in how to live the best life, right? Whether they're actively asking that question in their minds and journaling about it or something, or just doing it. Like everyone's interested in living their best life.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder maybe if we're talking about degrees of engagement and degrees of perhaps practice when we're talking about that.
Yeah.
I may be way too loose with my whole, like, everybody does philosophy.
I don't know if everybody does it. I don't know if everybody does it.
Right, because that gets to a definition of, like, exactly what is doing philosophy.
Yeah, and there's this really famous, I don't know if it's famous, but there's this argument in philosophy of religion that goes something like, that I think about a lot, that's something like, okay, the best way to show your love of God or something is to engage in contemplation about God.
Hmm.
But there's a lot of people in the world who, you know, my professor, who I remember, and I can agree with this because I think it's similar in a lot of families. It's like my, you know, 90-year-old Mexican grandmother, she is not thinking about, you know, is God limiting my free will? Is God, the problem of evil? She's thinking about, okay, I'm going to go to Mass in the morning, tomorrow morning, and I'm going to say a rosary while I'm there, and then I'm going to leave, and then I'm going to pray after every meal. And I think it's kind of similar for philosophy. I think it can go over the head of some people. Not over the head. That's kind of degrading. I think people are just not concerned with it. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like a real thing. And to think about these questions a lot, I mean, not everybody's going to do it, I think. Like if I had to work 90 hours a week outside in the heat, I'm not sure if I'd be asking these questions. I don't know, though. Maybe I would. I mean, I think this is an important question to think about. And I think this is like a good play at home question to ask yourself, too. Like, why do you think philosophy is a worthy thing to do? Why do you think that is? Like, why don't you listen to a history podcast instead of listening to Open Door Philosophy right now?
Right.
And that's just good practice, I think, to do with anything. Why is this a worthy use of my time?
Yeah, it makes me, what you said kind of reminds me of Marcus Aurelius's quote. I'm paraphrasing because I'll get it slightly wrong. Forget about worrying about what a good man is, be one.
Mm. Yeah.
Instead of contemplating God all the time, thinking about God, wrestling with ideas of God, just go out there and do it. Mm-hmm. Be the prayer instead of praying.
Yep.
I agree.
So yeah, those are both great counterarguments. Yeah.
This is I think, a really good, in a roundabout way, I think this is a really good segue into how to start with philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
How to start with philosophy. I think it's easiest for me to take it back to my entry into philosophy real quick.
Yeah, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Tell us the story. Story time.
Well, I don't know if this is going to be a good story time, but I will say, I think a problem that I found when I was trying to learn about philosophy that really bothered me was when I would go to the bookstore, when I would listen to a podcast, the types of questions that philosophers were asking, particularly modern day philosophers, the types of questions that they were asking and answering were either, you know, on the one hand, there was these academic philosophers. I can think of the one that I was the two that were sticking out to me at the bookstore at the time were Michel Foucault and Zizek guy, who's a modern day commie, two like kind of commie philosophers. And I thought the questions that they were asking were so dumb. And then on the other hand, there was these self-help philosophers, nobody who I can remember now. And I would read their books and I would just think to myself, oh my God, these are the dumbest answers that I've ever heard. Like, of course, like, but these don't actually add any value to my life. And so that was a big problem that I found when I was entering into philosophy. I think that, and this connects really back to our whole topic of philosophy and Marcus Aurelius. I think that there's a big black hole in philosophy over, especially in modern times, of philosophy being kind of pedantic and thinking about things that don't really matter and that are unimportant. And that can seem really, really important in the academic scope of philosophy, but that just for people just thinking about philosophy or trying to get into it, it's really just unhelpful.
I think Andrew's right about philosophy today seeming kind of pedantic and highfalutin, like up in the ivory tower. Philosophers are asking questions that don't really matter to regular people's lives, which I think that's such a shame that like a lot of academia can just be in an ivory tower and not apply to people's lives. But philosophy being the study of wisdom and asking questions about why are we here and what is our purpose and what should we do with that? I feel like that should be a part of people's lives if they want it to be. It should be accessible at the very least for people to study and like get introduced to philosophy outside of the like formal academic setting. I think it should mean something.
It's a hard line to toe. I think this is a thing, and I think we talked about this in one of our first episodes. I think people want philosophy to be very simple and very easy, but you're not going to go to a math professor and demand them to make their equations more accessible to the mathematician. Mm-hmm. And you're not, maybe for, you know, and you're not going to go to the English. I mean, I kind of want to stay away from the humanities because I think it's garbage, but that's a thing for another time. But you're not going to go to like the statistics or the political science professor who's looking at the latest elections to dumb down their research. You know, there's a place for academic philosophy, but I think you're certainly right, Taylor. Like the people of the past, like Plato and well, I don't know. I mean, even back then, even in the Enlightenment, even forever, philosophy's always been a thing that's been reserved for the elites. It never has not been. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know. Maybe now that we have, it's more accessible, this is just how philosophy has to be. It either has to be dumbed down, you have to go to the past to find more accessible things, or it has to be really, really advanced and inaccessible.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Parsons?
I think in the ancient world is more accessible than it is today, especially in the modern era. I think the intention was for it to be a bit more accessible. But you're right, even after the academy started with Plato, I mean, we're talking about aristocratic people who are mm-hmm. attending. There's a part of me that wants to believe that Stoicism was just widely practiced by many people from different classes. That may or may not be true.
Mm-hmm.
But back to your bookstore story. So two things I wanted to bring up. Self-help is a double-edged sword, self-help books.
Mm-hmm.
There are some self-help books that are very good. I'm thinking of David Brooks and The Second Mountain. That's a great self-help book. But that self-help book also references multiple philosophers, poets, literary figures, etc., who we hold in high esteem. But then there's other, you know, self-help books that are, I mean, it's just whatever. I would argue that philosophy is pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. There is some philosophy that's really, really well argued and really well put together. I feel like there's some philosophy, while it might be very interesting to read, just like a self-help book that's not that helpful, is interesting to read, maybe just might not be as well reasoned.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, I mean, you as 15-year-old Andrew showing up at the bookstore and looking at this section of books called philosophy, it's the same as if you go into the self-help section. You don't know what book to pick up,
mm-hmm.
right? And some are going to be more useful to you than others. And so I'm kind of curious, Andrew, like, do you remember any of those books that you got those first couple times you tried to get into philosophy?
Yeah, I definitely do. I mean, the two that I remember that I was the most disappointed with, it was the, actually, I can remember four. I can remember four books. The first one I bought was a Michel Foucault overview, like a Cambridge Companion, which was absolute garbage. It was bad. And then I tried to look for, I saw the Zizek guy's name, and I thought his name looked cool, so I picked him up. I thought it was, again, garbage. He was talking about sex and a lot of things that were very unimportant to me, which makes me sound, well, whatever. And then I remember, I think I wised up from that. I bought one book that had a bunch of, it was an anthology, basically, of mm-hmm. seven topics in philosophy, from epistemology mm-hmm. to aesthetics, with, you know, the good philosophers on those topics, mm-hmm. and then another one with philosophical thought experiments, which began my hatred of those.
Something of like 50 most well-known thought experiments or something.
That's
like
that. That's exactly right. I remember, if dolphins are smarter than people, should we, you know, keep, make, you know, laws around preserving dolphins or something? It's really dumb. I'm curious, what about you, though? What were you?
Me?
Yeah.
It was a part of me, for the sake of the flow of the show, to go from Andrew, who is just firing shots in the dark, hoping he hit something, to Taylor, who had a more structured entry,
and then
bouncing back to me.
Sure.
Yeah. So I think I've touched on this in, like, maybe the first episode I was on, but that's been almost a year. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it'd be a year in January.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I did philosophy as part of the IB program in school, and I started it because that was going to be the way that I would get my IB diploma, because I needed a one-year elective class to fill my, like, group six requirement or something, some kind of random requirement. And the only way it would work in my schedule was if I did individual study. What was that called?
Independent study.
Independent study with Mr. Parsons. So I came in first day of senior year, and Mr. Parsons actually gave me, like, an overview of philosophy. And I remember him telling me about Mary Wollstonecraft and being like the mother of Mary Shelley and talking about like Simone de Beauvoir and all of these really important female philosophers, which I kind of forgotten that until this week when I was actually reading Mary Shelley. Not Mary Shelley, Mary Wollstonecraft, and I'm writing an essay on her. And then the first philosopher I ever read was Bertrand Russell.
Yeah, your boy Bertrand.
Yeah, yes.
The problems of philosophy.
Mm-hmm, where he talks about sitting at a round brown table with like three legs. And if you look at it in this light, it looks this way. In some lights, it may look light brown. Sometimes it looks black. Is it still the same table if it's got three legs? And if you look at it from this direction, it's different. And then I was only in that class like that for like a week. And then my schedule switched around. And I was in like a regular classroom setting. And we started with the allegory of the cave. So, I guess two big ones, Bertrand and Plato.
Yeah, you got some big ones there. Mm-hmm. What? So if you can go back and think of yourself, you know, in that third or fourth week of school, what were you thinking about philosophy? If you're thinking about anything, you're like,
I remember.
What were your impressions at that point?
I felt like my brain was broken after I just read, like, I don't know, it was probably 20 pages of Bertrand talking about a table. And
yeah.
And hey, Mr. Parsons,
he continues on for like the next couple chapters
too. That's what you told me. But I was reading it. It was so meta. Mr. Parsons in his old office had a round brown table. And I was sitting at this round brown table reading Bertrand talking about a round brown table at the very beginning of my senior year of high school. In my brain, I just felt like it melted out of my ears. And I was like, oh my gosh. But I think I really enjoyed it from the beginning, that I was like, this is so interesting, but my brain is broken.
I sometimes wonder if students are like, what is this even about, and why am I in this class? I did have a student once at my previous school get very frustrated with, I don't know what we're talking about, and he just stopped the whole class. He's like, can you just tell us what the answer is? Like, he was really frustrated and animated. I mean, oh, it's so funny. That kid, I'll call him a kid, that kid to this day is a lawyer now.
Wow.
But anyway, yeah, I sometimes wonder if that's the reaction. So you had a very formal introduction. You're like, I'm like, here's Bertrand Russell. Here's Plato.
Yeah. Since that first reading of the Allegory of the Cave, I've read it at least three more times for like different classes. And that's one of the most fun pieces to revisit because it's so rich in imagery and information that every time you read it, I get something out of it that's different. And like hearing different people's ideas of like, oh, I noticed this, I noticed that. Just so cool. I love revisiting.
That's the beauty of good philosophy and good writing. Andrew, how many times do you think you've read Allegory of the Cave? Endless?
Yeah, probably 15, 20 times. I have no clue. Wow.
You've read The Republic.
I co-signed Taylor's
cover to cover
opinion.
Like three or four times.
Yeah. I co-signed Taylor's opinion very much. I think that's a deep spot. And let's use that as an example in a second to how to start philosophy. But I'm curious, Mr. Parsons, tell us about your introduction.
Right. Yeah. So this is interesting. I definitely remember talking about this in some previous episode,
but
as a high schooler, I was very interested in
poetry.
Poetry. Yeah. And especially the Romantics and the Victorian English poets. And then I started working on a English degree in college. And I mean, you just can't escape philosophical problems in literature. I mean, that's all literature is. Like, you have to have some issue, otherwise you don't have a story. And those issues, of course, with great literature is always something that's very philosophical, like Crime and Punishment, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, one of my earliest novels that I enjoyed was Les Miserables, my great mentor, Jean Valjean, my secular Jesus. And then, of course, Dante's Inferno was incredibly philosophical when I read that early in my life. And so, but outside of thinking about that, those types of things, and I journaled a lot back then about those big questions, I didn't really get into like what we'd call formal philosophy until my early 40s. or maybe, yeah, very early 40s, because I had questions about religion. I had always had questions about religion. I'd grown up a Christian, and I had moved in and out of belief in many different ways. There was a point in my college career where I was like, Christianity and capitalism make really bad bedfellows, and, you know, I was just highly critical, and I saw lots of paradoxes, and I'm telling you,
that's,
man,
funny.
I was all about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw lots of paradoxes, and so anyway, fast forward, I still had all these questions years later, and so I started reading books, and books that address these types of things, and I can't remember the names of any of them. A lot were what we had considered today, or what people might call today, progressive Christian viewpoints. But then I was at Ye Olde Bookstore up in Dallas, the old half-price bookstore, and I stumbled onto a book, and this is it. It was called God, A Guide for the Perplexed by Keith Ward. Mm-hmm. And I'd never heard of it. I didn't know what it was, but I was like, A Guide for the Perplexed. Well, that's me. So I picked it up, and turns out Keith Ward is a philosopher, and has written many books. He's a philosopher of religion, and is well known philosopher of religion. And in that book, I began reading all kinds of things about the connection between Platonism and development of Christianity. And he addresses all the big questions. I won't say he answered them, but. And so this is one of my recommendations. When you pick up a book like that, it's going to have references to other philosophers or other books. If there's something that interests you, you write that name down, or you write that book down, and you go find it on Amazon or whatever, and you order the thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's really great. I've purchased some duds using that method, but I've also purchased some really great books. So a good way to go about this is when you get these sort of generalist types of books that reference other books, that's a great place to start building a collection, if you will, of reading philosophy and different philosophers. But that's how I got into it. It was questions about God.
Same, honestly. I mean, this is becoming like how we got interested in philosophy episode again, but I think my introduction, I don't know, I was very young, early teenage, it was about God, but we can save that for a later day. But I think you raised like two really good points, especially in what you just said. The first is like things that stick out to you in philosophy, that's where you need to be. Questions, I mean, listeners of the show, you'll know that with Mr. Parsons, Taylor and I, like, our interests are wildly different. Mr. Parsons has a deep love for transcendental philosophy and Eastern philosophy, and Taylor, I don't know where I would put you at, actually. I know some philosophers that Taylor likes, Simone de Beauvoir, and I mean, I guess
I would say feminist philosophy.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, at least a lot of them you mentioned fall under that category, Mary Wollstonecraft being the first.
Yeah. Women in philosophy.
And your love of Philosophy Queens, that particular book, which you probably will talk about later. Anyway, continue, Andrew. What's yours?
And then mine, I think, is probably more ethics and political philosophy, I would say.
Yeah.
And so, like, me trying to pick up a book about, you know, transcendental philosophy, or picking up something probably about reality or epistemology, why do we know what we know, like, those things just do not interest me. They totally for me seem like irrelevant questions, but those are very important questions to Mr. Parsons and Taylor, and that's fine. And philosophy has a lot of these questions for a reason, and so I think definitely, like, you have to think to yourself, step one, like, what are you interested in philosophy? And then step two, and this is also what you pointed out, you need to figure out from there, where are you going to start with these topics? Like, how do you get into it? Mr. Parsons brought up find a generalist book, and I think that's great. I recommend, don't look for a philosopher first off the bat. This is my personal recommendation.
I agree.
Don't say, like, I'm interested in philosophy. I'm going to find a book about Nietzsche. That's my mistake. And I think that's mm-hmm. what a lot of people do. Yep. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. Find.
Oh, I think it's a big mistake.
It's the biggest one, I think.
And a lot of people do.
Yeah. Go to find some generalist article online about that field of philosophy or that area and figure out what people are saying is a good place to start with that. I think a really good introductory series is Oxford. It might be Cambridge. It's one of the two series. A Very Short Introduction to.
Mm-hmm.
Those are written by the eminent leaders in those fields, and they have tons of references. I mean, and that goes for things like economics and science, but it also goes very well into philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And just like Mr. Parsons said, if you're still interested in that, you can use those references to learn more about it. I have something else to say, but I want to give y'all an opportunity to come in right now and add anything if you want.
Well, I have something to say, Taylor, and then I want to toss it to you for Philosophy Queens. I want you to talk about that book.
Okay.
Yeah, Andrew, there's a lot of generalist books that are being published right now. Honestly, this is a pretty good time to get into philosophy. There's a lot of philosophy being published for a common audience, a general audience.
Mm-hmm.
The one you mentioned, Andrew, is one of the ones I was going to mention, A Short History of Philosophy, is written by Nigel Warburton, which is a great kind of overview of philosophers and what their main projects were, and every chapter is like 8 pages or something. Another one that I've read recently, it's called How to Teach Philosophy to Your Dog, and this guy goes over all the major aspects of philosophy, ethics and epistemology and all of it, and he does it from this perspective of, I'm going to talk to my dog about this, you know. And it's kind of silly. There's another one called The Socrates Express. If you want to get old school, there's a book called Sophie's World. That's a novel. Yeah. Justine Gardner wrote it. There's lots of things like that that's going to give you a broad overview of many different aspects of philosophy that are great books. And then from that, you know, maybe you can pick out, what is it that thing you want to know? Is it political philosophy? Is it religious philosophy? You know, because that's the problem with philosophy. It's so broad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so being able to hone in on at least one branch of philosophy is a start. And one of those branches is feminist philosophy. Mm-hmm. Taylor, tell us about the Philosophy Queens.
I love the Philosopher Queens. But okay, before I talk about that, I want to agree with Andrew saying, and Mr. Parsons saying, find what you love. And don't necessarily expend all of your time studying the areas that don't interest you. Like, I'm not a metaphysics person. In, like, the super nitty-gritty proofs of things, like Spinoza, makes me want to bang my head against a book. Those proofs are not for me. But Hannah Arendt, I could read her, an entire 600-page book that she's written, because I like that area of study and, like, the way that she writes interests me. Yeah, so that leads me back to the Philosopher Queens. It's a book, an anthology, written completely about female philosophers by female philosophers, like modern day women that are studying philosophy. It was put together by Lisa Whitting and Rebecca Buxton because they realized that they went into bookstore after bookstore after bookstore, and very few anthologies of philosophers even included a single woman in them. They'd be like the 100 best philosophers. They were hard-pressed to find one that included one woman, maybe one or two. So they created an anthology of all of these female philosophers from the beginning of time, the first woman mentioned in philosophy, Diotima, all the way up to like the very modern female philosophers that are active today. That was one of the first things that I read that I was like, wow, I really like philosophy. I really like these particular philosophers. And the chapters are short. They're probably 8 to 10 pages. And they're a good balance between academic language, but still very readable. So they convey these thinkers' ideas in a way that's very easy to process. And then in the back of the book, like a lot of other anthology or generalist books, they refer you to other works. So for like Simone de Beauvoir, the section said, okay, if you like this, read these essays, and it'll be like The Second Sex and this, this, and that. Or Hannah Arendt, you can read Eichmann in Jerusalem or like any of her other works. And I think that's a great way to get into philosophy, especially if you're interested in feminist philosophy or just what women have to say, because so often in academia, women are kind of pushed to the side and their stories and voices aren't as amplified as men are. So if that's something that you're interested in, definitely check out The Philosopher Queens, because it does such a good job about exposing you to women from all different times, all over the world, from Europe to Asia to Africa to America, and all of these women that have vastly different perspectives on what philosophy is and how to do philosophy and what's important.
It's a great pitch. Royalties coming your way.
I think there's a really good point here that I think, Taylor, you highlighted very well. And this is a distinction in philosophy that kind of messed with me when I was trying to enter into it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between philosophy and the history of philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's very easy. And it's not like one is worse than the other. It's not. It's really not. The questions that we ask in philosophy, or the questions that people ask in philosophy, you know, they're talked about and discussed over a long period of time. Like, why do we exist? Or what's the right way to live in the world? Or what is justice? And so following that train of thought and seeing how that progresses throughout time, that's like a history of philosophy approach. So that's definitely one way. And I think that's kind of the way that I think that's really a lot of the times how we present philosophy in this show. We find the earliest, we go through the train of thought up to today. That's great. Another avenue is just going into that area and in discussing, you know, discussing the current thought of that today, like the problem of evil. You don't, you know, you might not look back at St. Anselm or Thomas Aquinas or some randos in the 5th and 6th century. You might just look at Swinburne or modern thinkers today and just start from there. And that's okay. Like, both approaches are good. The academic is going to go back and look at all of these philosophical ideas and stuff, but that might not be what you're interested in. You might just be interested in thinking about these questions and seeing what cool people have to say on them, and that's fine. I have a unhealthy repulsion. That's not the right word. Revulsion.
Revulsion?
Revulsion against general books. I have a very unhealthy revulsion of that. And that's not something that's like new after I got a degree or was studying philosophy. That was like a thing that was happening when I was younger. And so I'm curious, y'all's, I have an idea, but I'm curious what y'all's opinion on generalist books are post a good way to get into the topic. Or a good way to get into the avenue.
I think it's a good way. I mentioned some books earlier that I think are good. For me, personally, I'm getting tired of reading them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's one or two coming out every year, maybe more than that. And they all cover the same stuff, and that's great. But I'm kind of getting tired of reading them.
Yeah.
Now, there might be, like, you know, a short introduction to you know, David Hume or something. That might be interesting for me to read. But just a blanket, this is philosophy, you know, kind of introducing you to new I think they're great for someone who has no experience with philosophy. For me personally, I've read enough of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because now I know the terrain. Go ahead. Sorry, Taylor.
Oh, no, you're good. I don't think I've ever read a generalist, what is philosophy? Philosopher Queens is maybe the closest it's come, but that's an anthology.
I would consider that to be.
So I don't know that I could weigh in, but it was helpful, at least a very short introduction to blank. We read a couple of those in Mr. Parsons' class. I think we read Philosophical Method, and then the one at the end of the year, you can cut this, they had the sex, drugs, and rock and roll chapter that we didn't read. What was
Did we read that?
We didn't read that chapter.
Who was that?
I don't know what that was.
Oh, what was that book then? I bet I was like, there's too much sex in this. You know, if anyone can make sex boring, it's either a biologist or a philosopher. Anyway, go ahead.
But I read a couple of the very short introductions, and I think those were pretty good at getting a quick lay of the land of, okay, this is how philosophy is done. People do it through dialogue or dialectic or thought experiments or math games. Maybe I'd know about math games if I read that chapter, but I don't know. I did enjoy them for a general, but once I've like started to learn about philosophy, I don't know that I could go back to a what is philosophy.
I feel like it's kind of like training wheels.
Mm-hmm. It is
and
training
like,
wheels.
There's a time for that for sure. There's totally a time for that. So like people who are listening who don't know where to start, like this is a good place to start. It's probably not where you'll want to be 5 years mm-hmm. from now, but it's a good place to start.
Well, I think this is like the natural segue. I think it's very difficult to figure out after you go from, you know, reading some of these generalist books. Say you read another good general one is Bertrand Russell's Introduction to the History of Western Philosophy. I mean, that covers a lot of people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's like,
it's classic.
Yeah, it is a classic. And then so the natural question is like, where do I go from here?
Mm-hmm.
And I think like it's true, you can look in these reference sections, but it's like, okay, how do I find good books after, mm-hmm. you know, I go through one generalist mm-hmm. book or whatever? I think it's really dependent on you. Like I said, there's a reversion, and I think it's probably good to go back and start looking at the first philosophers you can in like a field you're interested in to try to see how the field has grown over time. Like we always talk mm-hmm. about Plato, and we've kept bringing up the allegory of the cave. I mean, like Socrates is not a bad place to start, and especially like mm-hmm. the Republic. It has so much mm-mm. stuff in there, but that's like totally with a huge footnote. It's like, this is a really confusing book that I don't think anybody's ever solved.
Uh-huh.
And so like, how do I go from, reading a generalist book? Like there's this awful, some people might like it, but in my opinion, it's an awful book. It's called Socrates, A Man of Our Times by Paul Johnson. It's one of the most pointless books I've ever read. but how do I go from a book like that where it's talking to me about Plato very simply with training wheels on to reading something like The Republic or The Leviathan by Hobbes or, you know, any other of these big works?
Yeah.
Because I think that's step two, right? Like these big works.
Yeah.
So how do we do that?
Oh, geez. I don't even like reading the big works. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
There's a part of me, like as a general rule, this doesn't apply. Well, that's why it's a general rule. I just say it doesn't apply in all cases. For me, a general rule for someone starting out or maybe someone in their first year or two of reading philosophy, there are some philosophers you just straight up avoid. And
Hobbes.
And the bigger the name, probably the more you should avoid them.
Mm-hmm.
No one should start with Hobbes or Hume or Hegel or Nietzsche.
Yep.
Just no. Like, can you imagine if Thus Spoke Zarathustra was the first philosophy book you picked up? You'd be like, what the hell is this? And throw it to the side and, you know, go do some dishes or
Heidegger.
Something.
Yeah. That's a mistake.
Yeah. So, and believe me, there's nothing wrong with the great works. Don't get me wrong. Another great mistake I made, this is a good example of this, although not someone who's well known like Nietzsche or Hobbes or something, but I remember when I went to the bookstore once and I knew who Swinburne was, Richard Swinburne. We've talked about him before. He's a current philosophy of religion.
Yeah.
I picked up book one of his Coherence of Theism. I bought that thing. It was like $25. Used. I was like, I got home. I was like, oh, no. Not for me.
Yep.
Oh, Kierkegaard's another one. Kierkegaard's so hard to read.
Oh, Kierkegaard is so hard, but so good. So good if you have someone to walk you through it.
Totally.
Yeah.
But that's the deal. Do you have someone to walk you through it? And maybe this is where we can start talking about YouTube a little bit.
Yeah.
I know you had it in your notes, Andrew.
Yeah, YouTube's a good place to start. I think there's three really good resources that if they're done well, then they will really help you. The first is YouTube, and I think it just like there's a lot of bad places to start, but there's also some really good ones.
Mm-hmm.
The one, and we've talked to him before, and he's so great. I mean, he helped me in college. Is Gregory Sadler. He has a whole YouTube channel devoted to walking. I mean, he's a professor of philosophy. His whole channel is devoted to walking people through these big texts step by step. And I mean, he has them from everywhere from Socrates, from Plato to to Hegel. I mean, he is like, for every page of Hegel, he has a video on, like a 15-minute video. So he's excellent. I mean, he's like the cream of the crop, I think, on YouTube. His interpretations, like, they're not always correct, I think, but that's with the, like, understanding that he is fantastic for getting you, like, to understand what the heck is going on. The second thing I'd say, I mean, there's podcasts too, but I'm going to consider that YouTube. It just be wary. Just be wary. I think Reddit's a really good site for using a red flag on things, for figuring out, like, is this too hard? Or you can email us too. But I think another good one is, like, if you have a few friends interested in philosophy, trying to form a reading group.
Absolutely.
Two minds are better than one. And one mind is better than none. But I think that could be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And then the final one that I would recommend if you're serious about it, a lot of universities have continuing education programs that will offer 12-week lecture series with a PhD student or something. And I think those are really good. I mean, I know the one at Rice is fantastic. I've heard great things about it. I know the guy who leads it. And those are fantastic. And I know other great schools have those programs too. And if you live by a school, those are great. And I mean, a community college course, I think that's what, like $200. The Lone Star one by my house, I was looking, you can get some pretty cheap courses there if you really want to invest. And I think those are really good resources too. Yeah. I mean, community college professors, like, philosophy is such an absurdly difficult place to find a job at our local community college. There's some guy who got his PhD at Notre Dame. I mean, like, these are great young philosophers who are waiting for some old guy to die. And so those are good places good places to start, honestly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry, that was a lot. Yeah. Anything
that's add? Good.
If there is a philosopher you're interested in and there's a professor that specializes in that, I know here at Baylor, one of the professors that worked here was a Nietzsche scholar. And one of my professors, Dr. Schultz, is a Plato scholar. They love when people are interested in their work. And if you email them, they probably will get back to you and just say, like, hey, I'm blah, blah, blah. I'm really interested in XYZ. I see that you've written books on Plato. I know at least the professors that I've had would be more than willing to give you some information and kind of point you in a direction for that particular area of study, because they love to talk about what they do and don't get asked very often about, like, so what are your thoughts on Plato in this book? And they are just jumping for a chance to help people. If there is a professor that you can find, email them, or like any sort of philosopher that's written about other areas of study. They love to be contacted.
Yeah, I so relate to this. Yes, I have students who occasionally message me or send me an email. I had a student, I didn't even know who they were, and they like found me on Snapchat or whatever. And they start asking me philosophy questions. Aww. I mean, I just can't help it. Like, I'm like, okay, yes, let's talk about this. And professors are no different. They love what they do. They're passionate about it. You're just right. All the professors go send us email. If you can find a professor at your local college who teaches this stuff, and you want to ask them, like, hey, where should I start? I could almost guarantee, I can't totally guarantee, I almost guarantee you, they would be very interested in writing you back.
For sure.
And
no doubt.
And telling you what they think.
No doubt. And us too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, this is how this this episode started, frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had someone who wrote in, and actually Taylor corresponded quite a lot.
We cover a lot of ground between the three of us and stuff, so I think we'd be happy to give any recommendations we can.
Yeah. Man, what else was I thinking? Okay, so this is a, what is it called? This is a hot take. No, wait, that might be the wrong phrase. Yeah. We'll just find out.
Let's hear it.
If you do end up with a philosophy book that's kind of difficult, like you've picked up an actual philosophy, like a book by a philosopher, like Thomas Hobbes' Leviathan or something, book. And you're having a hard time understanding that, all right, here's the spicy part.
Drop it.
Go to ChatGPT and type in, please explain to me, blankety, blankety, blank, by Thomas Hobbes in Leviathan. So whether you say, like, please explain chapter one,
that's a good one,
or please explain this particular theory or whatever, what does Hobbes mean by this? There's lots of places you can find it on the internet, but I found in my own research, what is it, Taylor, the Kierkegaard book we did an episode on a while back?
Yes.
It was Sickness Unto Death. Sickness Unto Death. I had some trouble with that one. Mm-hmm. I did, the first couple of paragraphs. Actually, the first chapter. Once I got past the first chapter, it was fine. But I was very confused about some things. And there's also, outside of, like, ChatGPT, there's also some, I mean, like, Spark Notes and stuff like that. It will get you going, is what I'm saying. It'll get you out of the rut and explain things a little bit more so that you can still get through that book. You still may struggle with it, but it will make more sense to you, and you may not, you know, chunk it on the pile over there and never return to it. So that's another another way I think you can more easily get through something.
That's a great point. That's a fantastic
criticism about AI. But
Spark Notes and Cliff Notes, I've used Spark Notes more, but they're generally pretty good at giving you the main points. That way, when you're reading, you know what you're reading for, and you're doing less work trying to figure out, okay, what is John Locke saying literally? And you can think about, okay, what does that mean, more than trying to do more of, like, the work of just comprehending.
Yeah,
let me give a good example. In John Ciardi's translation of Dante's Inferno, before each canto, which is a cool poetry way to say chapter, before each canto, he explains what's going to happen in the canto. It's like, you know, two or three paragraphs. And then you read the thing, which is a bit confusing. But because you have that pre-knowledge going into it, which isn't super in-depth, but it just gives you an idea of, like, okay, this is what you're getting ready to read. And then you read it, you're like, aha. And then at the end of the chapter, it has footnotes for everything you just read in that chapter. I mean, believe me, give me a soapbox and I will go off on, like, how Spark Notes is, you know, the death of literature or something. But as far as giving you the basic idea of what's being, what you're getting ready to read, it's a good place to start, because then you can pick up on the nuance of the arguments and you really understand better with a bit more clarity what whatever it is you're getting ready to read. Don't rely on it for anything else other than that, though.
I agree.
Spark Notes is like Wikipedia. It's a good place to start, but only to start.
Please start.
I would even say Wikipedia is better than Spark Notes.
Yeah, I would too.
these days, 15 years ago, I wouldn't have said that.
I agree. Yeah. We need to have a talk about that sometime. Next week, Wikipedia versus Spark Notes.
Next week. Gosh, I think we kind of run the gambit? Is there any way we can, like, in a concise way, say, like, okay, here's our 5 points, or whatever, we should have written this down. Here's our 5 points of, like, how to start, or something like that.
I think there is. First point was find out your interest. Second point was look for a generalist book. Third point was use that generalist book to figure out maybe primary source resources. Fourth point was to supplement your primary resources reading with material, good material online. And then the fifth point would be to, which we haven't talked about, talk about it with people, but which I guess was kind of in the reading group thing.
Yeah. Wow. It almost seems like our show had structure, our episode had structure.
Wow.
We didn't abandon the structure.
Well, Madalena, thanks for writing in. That was a great question, and I think resulted in a great episode. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in this week for this most recent episode of Open Door Philosophy. We're so glad you did. We'll just pass it on over to Taylor.
Thank you so much, Madalena, for your question. If you have a question or a comment about any of our episodes, please reach out to us on Instagram at Open Door Philosophy, or at our email. If you contact us at either of those places, we will get back to you. So if you have a question and it's something in depth, like where to start philosophy, we may do a whole episode on it. So if there's something that you want to see, please reach out to us and go check out our YouTube, which Andrew is very dedicated to getting all of our episodes up. And if we do have video episodes, they will be up there, hopefully at some point soon.
I was going to say thank you for our 3 new subscribers who subscribed to our YouTube channel this week. If you are a new subscriber, we'll mention you on the show. Just send us an email and we'll mention you.
Let's do it.
All right. Do we have anything else?
You got to thank good old Kevin MacLeod.
Of course I do. Thank you to Kevin MacLeod for the use of his music in the intro and outro. It's very, very groovy, and we always appreciate it. So I guess that's it. I guess that's all, folks.
That's it?
That's it. So remember, when your life is in need of some philosophy, the door is always open. Thank you.
Bye.
Namaste.